From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week via Skype, Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal, Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, and our moderator is Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. With the national election here in America only about 3 weeks away, Election Day is November 3rd, we'll discuss where the race for the White House stands. This past Wednesday, the candidates for vice president had their debate. We'll consider what the current VP, Mike Pence, and the challenger, Senator Kamala Harris, had to say, and what difference that might make in the campaign. Also, what's going to happen next? A debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden or not? President Trump was diagnosed with COVID-19. He spent 3 days in a hospital, but then back at the White House, he said he's feeling great and was anxious to return to active campaigning. Well, that's a brief summary of some very unusual events here in American politics. Tom DeFrank, you've been covering these subjects for decades. So with your experience and perspective, will all this help President Trump be reelected?
Not at the moment. I've said before, Dan, that overnight is a lifetime in politics, and we still have almost a month, 3 to 4 weeks left. So anything can happen. And no one thought that Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg would die, altering the political landscape. But at the moment, President Trump is not doing well. His polls have gotten worse. As you mentioned, he's been stricken with coronavirus. He's quarantined at the White House at the moment. And he did not have a good debate in the first debate with former Vice President Biden. He's now saying that he is not going to participate in the second debate because it's going to be a virtual debate because of health reasons. So we're going to have to see how that comes out. There's a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of moving parts. But it's fair to say that the president's political standing has slipped in the last several days.
Presidential election campaigns are always fascinating, but this one, I don't think you could write it as a script for a movie because, you know, everyone would say that's not believable. The president nominated a federal judge, Amy Coney Barrett, to be elevated to the Supreme Court. She'll need to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. Now, the event introducing Judge Barrett was on the South Lawn of the White House, and that's now been labeled by some as a super spreader event, because in the days that followed, well-known people in politics who were in that audience, almost everyone not wearing a mask, got COVID-19, including, as everyone has heard, President Trump and his wife, Melania Trump, but also two U.S. senators who were there and others who maybe got the virus somewhere else, but a lot of critics said the Trump White House was careless. Now, Michael Williams, what's your take on all these strange, apparently connected events from the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court justice, to the nomination, committee hearings starting in the Senate this coming week, and a president of the United States who was hospitalized but insists that he's fine now and that coronavirus for him was almost a blessing?
When you look at these connected events, I mean, obviously the death of a Supreme Court justice is a personal tragedy. It's a national tragedy because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a hero to many, and a political just sort of bombshell because it throws this level of unpredictability and upheaval into an already roiled body of waters when you talk about this election. When you talk about the super spreader event, as we're calling it at the White House, I think what it does is highlight the general irresponsibility and sort of lack of reality, the detachment from the realities of the COVID-19 pandemic for the rest of the world, as apart from the way the White House sees it for themselves and the GOP sees it for themselves. They don't think they need to wear masks. They don't think they need to social distance. All of the things that the Center for Disease Control and other responsible doctors are telling you that you need to do to avoid and control the virus, they do not do. They patently do not do it. And they think that it's a sign of patriotism. As a result, you have an event that created an outbreak such that the White House last week had more positive tests than the rest of Washington, D.C. combined, had more tests than Taiwan, a nation of 23 million people. This is a stark reminder, a stark example of how this sort of sense of entitlement, this sense of detachment from the process, from the coronavirus, and their handling of it in general. If you can't keep your own workplace, your own home free of the virus, how can you reasonably claim that you can actually service the needs of a nation that needs protection and leadership during this time? Look at the names on the list of people who have tested positive, because that's spread not only to the Senate, to the White House, to the president's campaign, but also to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The military leaders of the country are now working from home like the rest of us on Skype and Zoom. You really can't overstate the importance and the disappointment that I think a lot of people feel at the handling of the coronavirus and what this super spreader event has represented.
Even though COVID-19 has become the top issue in the election campaign, how did the Trump administration do? You still have different points of view where, of course, supporters of the president say they did as much as you could expect. At an early stage, his supporters say he cut off most travel from China, he cut off travel from Europe, and then made a major effort to make sure that ventilators would be available at hospitals across America, and also started a program to develop vaccines against COVID-19. And President Trump has been boasting that American companies will come up with a vaccine. He used to say before Election Day, November 3rd, and lately the administration is saying before the end of this year. After he got out of his hospitalization, he said he's feeling great. On Thursday morning, he said, "I think I'm better and I would love to do a rally." And President Trump said, "I don't think I'm contagious at all." Tom DeFrank, how may American voters, you know, react to that kind of claim? For instance, the president saying that he doesn't think he's contagious instead of depending on a wider opinion from doctors.
Well, this is a classic situation. It's important to the president's psyche, and always has been, for him to be seen as tough and strong. He hates the notion of weakness. When the president was told by his doctors he needed to go to the hospital, he resisted, but finally agreed to go. But from the moment he got to the hospital, he was agitating to get out. He said, "I feel fine. I feel better. I feel like I felt 20 years ago." So he was back at the White House, and within 24 hours at the White House, he was back in the Oval Office despite the recommendations of many of his White House aides. The situation is the president wants to look strong. He doesn't want to look weak. The other problem is we're getting next to no information. The doctor, a Navy commander, is putting out five-sentence advisories, but they're not saying other than the president says he feels fine. The real problem here is, Dan, that the White House is not following the science. The White House continues to think that wearing masks is an unnecessary thing. So the problem is, this particular White House is not really interested in following the science. So to say it is muddled is an understatement, that is for sure. And what happens, I don't know. I mean, the medical experts are saying the president, whether he's on the rebound or not, is not in any condition to go out and do rallies because he could still be contagious. I mean, this is the president's bravado and bravura overtaking the science. So we'll have to see how that sorts out in the days ahead.
Tom, what's your assessment about the American voter? Donald Trump's base of loyal voters in key states where it was very close 4 years ago, that base may like the image of President Trump as the strong leader.
Absolutely. And I think that's why he's doing this. There are polls that show that Biden, of all people, is now ahead of Trump in the over 65 category, which is phenomenal. That's astounding. Some pollsters say they don't believe it, but that's what the polls are saying. And I think the president for weeks has been intent on keeping his base together. And I think for the most part, the base will stick with him. But the base loves the what I would call the macho routine. You know, we're strong. When the president came back to the White House, he walked up the stairs. He didn't go into the White House at ground level. He walked upstairs and he came out on the balcony and took his mask off immediately and saluted the helicopter that had brought him there. And then he went into the White House and made a video, which was released in about 15 or 20 minutes after that. So the base likes the strength, but the polls suggest that a majority of the American people are less sure. He's playing to the base because he needs to keep the base together, and I think the base will stick with him. But on the other hand, it doesn't look like it's playing well outside his base.
Not playing so well outside the base. Now, Michael Williams, when you hear that the opinion polls may actually have shifted, maybe toward Joe Biden, you know, we've been saying for weeks here on Issues in the News that there are not many undecided voters, but maybe there actually are voters who are paying attention to the campaign and could change their minds.
Yeah, it's interesting to go back to what Tommy says and talks about the different polls that the president is falling behind in. It's not just the polls that count the votes in the swing states, which are significant, and the fact that Biden has built up these leads, in some cases, on the president is noteworthy, even at this stage, as we all know, long way away. A day is a lifetime in politics, and anything could happen. But it's also, when you poll on who would be more responsible with the economy, you have Joe Biden leading in double digits over President Trump. You have a poll that asks who would be more reasonable and more effective in managing the coronavirus. You have, again, Joe Biden leading Donald Trump. These are polls that are showing that people are looking at what's happening now, what's actually happening. You have over 200,000 Americans dead. We have positive tests that are rising all over the country as we go into flu season. And we're expecting maybe not even our second wave, but the second half of the first wave, as Dr. Anthony Fauci sometimes calls it. There may be a small percentage of voters who are undecided. I classify them as those voters who voted for President Barack Obama twice and voted for Donald Trump once, because obviously those people have a propensity and ability to change their minds.
And as to whether voters have already made up their minds, at least 4.5 million have already cast their votes. Yep, you can fill it out early and mail it in or deliver your ballots. What's going to happen next with the Supreme Court nomination and more after this short break?
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal. Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington. And our moderator, Dan Raviv, columnist for Newsday.
Let's dive right back into American politics in the shadow of the COVID-19 pandemic, which has killed more than 210,000 Americans. And as you know, this coronavirus has killed more than 1 million people around the world. And yet, as scheduled on November 3rd, America will vote for president, also for every member of the House of Representatives, and about one-third of the plus state and local officials who will be elected. Now, Michael Williams, what's the expectation on how long will it take till we know who's been elected president? Usually we know it about 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, about 6 hours or so after all the states close their polling places. Will it be different this year, Michael?
I think there's a likelihood that it will be. And I think that states and local governments are preparing for that eventuality where we have close races, where we have so many mail-in ballots that are being employed in this election cycle as opposed to previous election cycles, where you have COVID-19 being a concern and some people not wanting to go to a polls in a close personal situation and wanting to send in ballots. I think, though, that the key question is not, or it shouldn't be, let's say, whether the United States can actually pull off a fair and open and honest election. It is astounding to me that this is the question in the country that for the last 75 years has sent election monitors to other countries to try to monitor whether or not fair and equal elections, open elections are happening. And now you have it in the United States where we are questioning ourselves. The president of the United States is questioning his own country's ability to actually hold a fair election. I think the eventuality could be that we don't know until the next day or the day after or the day after. And that's perfectly fine. Let every vote be cast. Let every vote be counted. What the democracy, not the Democrats, but the democracy needs to prepare for is a president who refuses to leave office. My grandmother told me, when somebody tells you who they are, believe them. And the president has said time after time after time, he's made it clear that he's not going to accept the result of this election if he's on the losing side. I believe him. Why do I believe him? He questioned the results of an election that he won in 2016, claiming that he had won the popular vote, where he clearly did not. So if a president is going to question an election that he's won, is there any doubt that he's going to question an election that he didn't win? The call to action is to prepare those actions and processes that need to be prepared to effect a peaceful transfer of power. It is the crown jewel of our democracy. It needs to be protected. I don't think it's time for anyone to assume that that's going to happen on its own in this election.
White House officials say President Trump did not promise to accept the published results of the election because there might be a lot of cheating. But with millions of mailed-in ballots, maybe somebody will interfere. Maybe the count won't be right. There could be a lot of legal challenges. What do you think, Tom DeFrank? I mean, the president has said that he wants to get Amy Barrett confirmed to the Supreme Court because he needs all 9 justices in case the election result goes to the Supreme Court. Tom?
Well, I think that's right. The president wants Judge Barrett on the Supreme Court because he's telegraphing that if he doesn't like the results in this state or that state or overall, he's going to ask the Supreme Court to consider this on an emergency basis. And Judge Barrett is a very distinguished nominee, but she's very conservative. And he is counting on Barrett not only being on the court for many years, but being on the court in time to help adjudicate what looks to be another Supreme Court legal challenge. I mean, the president has finally, through a spokesman who has now herself been tested positive for coronavirus, is saying that he will accept the results of a fair election. So who defines what's fair? I think Michael is right. I think we're heading towards multiple challenges of the results, however they may turn out to be. Now, the Democrats are trying to say that's why you need to come out by the millions and vote, because the only way we're going to be able to avoid a lot of legal challenges is for Biden's win to be so monumental, so epic, that there's no real chance that it could be overturned. It is, in fact, looking like a mess. And the president is very clear. He said many, many times that this election is going to be a disaster. We won't know for days or weeks or months. And he once said not long ago, we may never know who won this election. Well, we have to know because the Constitution is very clear. The president and vice president have to step down on January 20th of 2021.
And just to clarify for our global audience, on January 20th, we have Inauguration Day. Even if President Trump has won re-election, Mr. Trump and the vice president, Mike Pence, would be sworn into office on January 20th. Or, of course, if the Democrats win, it'll be Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. But as we heard, we have to know before then. How about this past Wednesday when the running mates, Kamala Harris and Mike Pence, the current vice president, debated in Salt Lake City? They were well distanced on stage, about 4 meters or 12 feet apart. There was even clear plexiglass between them to prevent any infection from spreading. Now, Michael, how did that debate go? You know, Mike Pence versus Kamala Harris, very different styles.
Very different style. Kamala Harris, I will say that I believe that she held serve, if you want to use a sports/tennis analogy. I think that she did well. She represented herself and she represented the person at the top of the ticket, former Vice President Biden, very, very well. Rather than contrast Mike Pence versus Kamala Harris, I think the more valuable thing to do is to compare the style of Mike Pence versus Donald Trump. Because again, I think that any GOP who gets on a stage and sits in front of a microphone at this point has an audience of one, which is the president. And in his attempt to be that same sort of forceful person that he is, and that really isn't Mike Pence, he's more of sort of a genteel, polite person in general. He tried to mimic that style of talking over the other candidate, talking over the host. I know from my conversations that this did not go well with the public, especially with women who seem to have experienced that in meetings and in social life, being talked over by a man. And they took that to be a sign of disrespect, and it did that they did not like it. But he didn't do it with the effectiveness that Donald Trump does it. If you're going to make a comparison, if Donald Trump is a steamroller, Mike Pence was more like a leaf blower. He sort of made that noise and kept droning on and on and on after the moderator said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't think that either one was really significant and changed minds, but I think they did have the visuals that told you when you saw that plexiglass up there, this is up here because you, Mr. Vice President, might be positive. You were present at a super spreader event and you, Mr. Vice President, are the head of the administration's coronavirus response. And in that, I think that Kamala Harris actually went easy on Vice President Pence. She could have gone a lot harder on him than she did, but the visuals were striking in terms of what COVID-19 has done to this country and to this campaign.
What crosses my mind is that opinion polls indicate that Biden and Kamala Harris are leading in the election campaign. And so why should she take any chances or be bitter or angry? Tom DeFrank, what did you think of Harris versus Pence?
Well, I think the bottom line is that neither one of them made a lethal mistake, and neither one of them did anything that's going to change the arc or the trajectory of this election at the moment. I think Pence had the tougher time because, as Michael said, he was playing to an audience of one, not the millions. I kept track last night because Pence is well known for mentioning President Trump's name all the time, constantly. So last night, he mentioned President Donald Trump's name 70 times, a little more than 70 times. And I'm sure that pleased President Trump. It was far more civil than the first Trump-Biden debate. But it didn't move the needle, as some people say. Well, it was really basically a draw. If that is true, if you believe that, I would say that a draw was a win for Biden, because a draw means the fundamental dynamics of the election were not changed by the vice presidential debate.
Vice President Pence did mention what Republicans consider a scandal. They claim to have evidence that when Barack Obama's 8 years as president were ending and Donald Trump had been elected in late 2016, the Obama administration, supposedly with the candidate Hillary Clinton, who lost, created suspicion that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. Republicans say false suspicion. Now, this is one of President Trump's favorite topics. This past Thursday on TV, he said, why hasn't Hillary Clinton been indicted? Tom DeFrank, what's your take on this Republican claim of the Obama-Biden scandal wrongly accusing Trump and getting the CIA and the FBI involved? Will this have any traction at all with voters?
It will have traction with the Trump base, who love the president and who believe every word of these allegations. I mean, President Trump has called this alleged scandal the worst scandal in American history. But there's no evidence that anyone other than the base is really engaged in this. This is a base sweetening sort of attack, and I think it's going nowhere. It hasn't so far.
Tom, you sound like you will be amazed, stunned, if President Trump actually wins on November 3rd, or it's not that simple.
No, it's not that simple. I mean, I've said it before, and Michael said it a little while ago, overnight is a lifetime in politics. Things happen. The odds are against him at the moment. If I were running for president, I'd rather have Biden's numbers right now than Trump's numbers.
Michael Williams, I'm sure you'd love to make a prediction of how it'll turn out. So what do you say as of now?
It being the 2020 election, I'd love to make a prediction on that. I mean, based on the numbers that you see, Tom is right. You would love to be more in the position of Vice President Biden than President Trump if you're reading the tea leaves as shown by the current polling that we have. But look, there were similar numbers in terms of a lead for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump at this point 4 years ago, right around October. And then other things started to happen. Tapes started to come out as the investigation started happening. There are a couple of things happening here. The fact that the Trump campaign is still running against Hillary Clinton seems to be punching in the dark to try to turn Joe Biden into every Democrat, to set up these evil Trojan horses in AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's too liberal, and Hillary Clinton is too crooked, and Joe Biden is hooked up with all of these people. I think it's just a lost cause. It's not going to change anybody's mind. All these issues are decided in terms of how the voters feel about Russia and Hillary Clinton and the server. I think that it's a clearly partisan move. The person who engineered this, the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, is a partisan politician with no intelligence background. I think that the GOP is more interested in saying lock her up about Hillary Clinton than actually locking her up, because why wait until 3 weeks before the election to attack any seriousness? Short answer, I'm not going to choose a winner right now.
And between now and Election Day, November 3rd, a lot more is going to happen. It's the nature of things, especially this year. That's all the time we have for this edition of Issues in the News. Thanks to Tom DeFrank, contributing editor of the National Journal, and Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, where this program is produced by the Voice of America. I'm Dan Ravine.